on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. And if you listen to the show, you will catch big fish. Check out the 28 kilo land-based mulloway on The Big Fish podcast page, and we'll share the story of its capture in our first cast on TBF this morning with the waymaster Cole Trenneman from Port Macquarie, who pointed our star angler in the right direction from the counter of the tackle shop. It's coming up next on The Big Fish. If you want to catch a big fish, then like Peter Cording of Port Macquarie, listen to The Big Fish. Cole, the Waymaster Trenneman.
Yes, mate, I love tinkering with tackle, especially fishing tackle.
Well, this guy, Peter Cording, I mean, that is a fish of legend. Tell us all about it.
I was in the shop there, young Pete came in. I've known Pete for a while now. I'm giving him a bit of help out on the beach and that sort of stuff. And his biggest fish to date, I think, was on the beach, was just on a metre, which was about 8-9 kilo, or maybe even 10 kilo. And then he rang me the other day, and he goes, "I've got a behemoth." I said, and I saw, I was a little bit, I didn't mean to sound a bit short with him. I said, yeah, righto, mate, whatever. Anyway, I said, "Bring it over, we'll have a look." And he got over there, and he said, "Hey, come here a little bit, sort of, you weren't really excited about it." And I said, "Well, mate, everybody says they've got an absolute monster or a giant, and it works out to be 20, 21 kilos. I said, they're a big fish when they're in the water. When you first pull them out, you will goggle eyes if you've never caught big fella before. And anyway, I said, okay, and I said, give us a look. And he pulled it out. I said, that is a very good fish. I asked him, how much did he reckon? He said, about 30 plus. And I said, no, had a look at it. And I said, no, I'll give you 28. And he goes, you reckon? I said, yeah. I said, I'll tell you why later. So he put it on the scales, and he wouldn't believe it, pulled down exactly to 28, so there's another tick on the wall for the Waymaster.
That's why they call you the Waymaster.
That's right.
He can look at you and tell you how fat you are, too. He looks at me and says, 127 kilos. He's spot on.
I'll sit out on that, mate.
This is a fish of a lifetime for this wonderful bloke, and he heard our spot. You mentioned the big lures. You mentioned the big paddle tail soft plastics. You talked about where to fish, when to fish, you know, how to use those lures in these run-out conditions when the jewfish are waiting around the river mouths for all of the bait to pour out. And this, I guess that Coolabung lure would maybe match a large mullet, perhaps?
Yeah, mate, that's what they're designed to do. I know the bloke who makes them, young Eddie, and he designed them to look like was a big mullet.
Yeah, and there it is, right down the gob. If you go to our Big Fish podcast website, you'll see that big lure right down the huge mouth of this massive mulloway that Peter's cradling there on the rock wall at the river mouth. And as I say again, don't go anywhere near flooded rivers. But this was this was before the flood. This was last week, before the rivers all burst their banks and became very dangerous. So it was just at the start of the rain event. But he did everything he heard on the radio, and look at the result.
That's correct, mate. Look, sometimes I don't speak garbage. I do have some sense sometimes.
Look, you've caught plenty of jewfish. You know what you're talking about. There's no doubt about this. And did he tell you about the capture? I mean, how did he work the lure? What was the gear? That sort
of
thing?
Yeah, mate. No, he was using a fairly stout rod, as you would gather, and a big long bit of braid he had on too. I think it was 30 or 50 pound. I remember putting it on his reel for him there the other week. And I think he had 60 or 80 pound leader. And he was just a real, he threw it out. As I told him, I'd just throw it out into the carp, just let it take it as far out as he can. Put the rod tip down and just wind real slow. I said, if you want to give it a little bash or a little jiggle, every now and then you can. But he said he was just like a big long sweeping motion. And then I reckon because the lure was so far down its throat, I'd say he's done that. The fish has come up behind and felt the vibration of the lure going through. The fish has come up, and as he's let the lure back, as he's sort of come back to wind again, because he's swept the rod forward, he's bring it back, and he's winding down on it, the jew's just come up and inhaled the lure like that, giving him a split second to grab it.
Yeah, describe this lure, because we also spoke about great big paddle tail soft plastics that you fish in a similar way, very slow and give them a little bit of action every now and then with the rod tip, but mainly down near the bottom. Tell us about these lures. How are they designed? How deep do they go?
Well, some of them, like the Mate Hutch has got a few, but these lures here, they run at about that 2 metres. You know, a lot of factory-made ones run at that, say, 3 to 5 feet. You know, at say 6 to 10 foot would probably pull them up. But these blokes, you know, they get down there a couple of metres, and they got a really big wide action on them and a body roll. So they're one thing to note too for all the purists out there, that it did not have a rattle in it. So it was a silent lure, so it's all vibration.
Very interesting indeed. And obviously a bit of current pushes them down a bit as well with the big bib, and you just slowly retrieve. The jewies would be mainly sitting along the wall, would they? Not so much out in the current, waiting to ambush the bait?
Sometimes they do. Like down home here, I know that when the bar's made up at certain times of the year and you get a good push there like that, you can let your lure out 50 to 60 or 70 metres out, and you bring it down, and it sort of drops off the back of what we call the bar. That's why it all lumps up and gets nasty, and there's a little bit of a hole. And a lot of them probably just lay down in there where there's not much current going straight over top of them, and they just lay down underneath there, and they'll hunt that way.
And when that big lure or big soft plastic comes bouncing by, they lurch out and smash it. They obviously get tons of food when these events are on. They just sit there and gobble up everything coming down the river. I mean, you know, they're amazing fish, aren't they? This is a big fish that Peter Cording has caught, and we sort of played a part in its capture. I think we can share at least a couple of fillets. Peter, if you're listening, mate.
Hey, drop mine at the tackle shop, mate. We'll look after you.
Yes. Trenno can eat mine.
Oh, there you go.
But isn't it lovely? Isn't it lovely when people listen to the expert, and we know what an expert is, a drip under pressure, and then go out and deliver? He must love you forever.
No, I wouldn't say love, but he has a bit more respect for me than what he did before.
Yeah, so much easier doing it the way he did it rather than trying to find the live baits and keep them alive all night and walk the wall. He just went down for a bit of an early morning session, I guess, and or late afternoon session, and Bob's your uncle, and pouring down with rain. The photo that he sent through is absolutely saturated, but the grin that's on his face is nearly as big as the one on the jewfish. It's a huge fish.
No, mate, well done to Pete, mate. He's, like I said, he's been coming in the shop now for a little while, and he does a lot of... I first met him down on Lighthouse Beach there, and I said, what are you fishing here for, mate? He goes, oh, I don't know. I said, well, follow me down. I said, if you want to come down and get a jew, just come down. By the time he got down there, this is back in the day when you could have two fish, and I had two around that metre mark. And I said, well, here, mate, this is your spot. I'll see. He said, what's here? And I said, well, as that drops down, as this tide drops back a little bit, I said, there's a little bar. I'll come over on your right there, and there's a little gutter. And I said, there's another one out the back and another one on the left-hand side. I said, there's a bit of a hole here, and as it drops down, so it drops down too far. I said, another hour will be no good. Anyway, he come back up to me, and he said, oh, I didn't get a fish, but he said, I know where to go. And I said, yeah, but that might change. I said, beaches are the same. They don't stay the same. I said, he said, well, how do you know where to fish? And I said, I've got a GPS, mate. I'll mark it. Roughly where the hole is.
Yeah, it's great. And what a fantastic evolution as a fisherman. I mean, to catch that fish land-based, so big. I mean, just an excellent effort. And it's wonderful that we can help people catch big fish here on The Big Fish.
That's correct, man. I'll tell you what, your mate there, that we're down where you are, he takes you out for a jury, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of people who know what they're doing, but they're pretty secretive about it. You're one of the few who really just give all the secrets, and if people are keen enough, they'll get one. You helped me out. I remember when I was on a bit of a jewfish quest, it was one that I hadn't ticked off, and I went out 5 nights with the right tides around this time of year too, and we got two legal-sized ones, and I think we got two that we had to let go. So, you know, if you do everything right, you're a chance.
Correct, that's right, mate. It is a bit of a science, and once you've worked them out, you're right. But look, everybody says, oh, why do you give away? So I said, if they're good enough, they catch them, they'll catch them. That's the thing. Like, you know, you can always lead a horse to water, mate, but you can't make him drink.
You've got to dedicate some time to it. It's one of those fishing equations where time, particularly for these big predators, equals catch. It's different to catching brim or whiting or whatever, which is fast and furious if you know what you're doing. It's a bit of a waiting game. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. And even then, it might not come off. But if you do it for long enough, and I remember in my little 10-foot tinny with the 5-horsepower motor full on. I had that big bronze beauty in the bottom of the boat, and I rang you up as with the wind in my hair coming back in the middle of the night, and it had all come together, and I just said, thank you, mate. That was very good.
That's good, mate. But like the great Starlo always said, about every big fish is worth, it's about 50 hours between every big fish. Some people do it a bit quicker than that, but most anglers, it's about 50 hours of fishing time between each big, and I mean big fish.
Well, Peter maximised his chances by knowing where they're going to be with freshwater run out, you know, the start of the flood.
Mm.
Can't reiterate enough, don't go near flooded rivers now,
right.
But this was a week ago after last Saturday's big fish. So he maximised his chances and listened to how you present those big lures, where the fish will be. You know, he's out there in pouring rain as well, you know, wet as a shag, standing on a rock. I mean, you've got to be pretty mad or pretty dedicated. So he deserves it. He deserves it. And
he did get his mad medal from me, mate. I said, you've actually won, you've actually earned your MAD award.
Yeah, well, you know, it's great to have really good experts on the program, and I class you as one of the best when it comes to beach rock and breakwall fishing. You know, you do know your stuff, and it's a lot easier in a boat too. You do fish out of your boat. I know skid marks gets a good workout, but you do a lot of land based, and I think that really is a test to catching big jewfish land based is a fantastic thing. Tight lines to you, Trenno.
Not a worry, champion. I'll go and have a cup of tea.
Good stuff, and well done to Peter Cording, who tuned into the big fish, wrote down a few notes when it comes to lures and tactics and techniques, and caught himself a 28-kilogram mulloway. Tight lines, mate.
See you, bud.
Coming up next on The Big Fish, a Health of the Streams report from the Snowy Mountains with Steve Samuels.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish with Steve Samuels from the Monero Acclimatisation Society. Steve, your thoughts on the Four Corners report? It seemed to be very balanced. The horse people got a fair go, and the scientists got a fair go.
Yeah, most definitely, Scott. Good morning. It was for those who haven't seen it, I would really encourage you to jump onto iView and watch the episode Feral. It was just a really, really good report. I mean, it was very well balanced. I mean, everybody had their chance to have their say. But from my point of view, there were two things that came out of it. One is that the horses do need to be removed from the park, at least managed down to sensible numbers. And that, you know, some of the tactics employed by the horse lobby, especially threatening people and making all those sort of really wild and left of centre sort of claims to maim and hurt people, just really shows, you know, how divisive this issue's been. And, you know, something needs to be done quickly to actually solve the problem, because if it goes on forever, it's really just going to degenerate into, you know, a really bad situation.
Like a knife to the heart when you said that some of those little creeks that I used to fish years ago when I lived down that way were probably irreparably damaged, gone.
Yeah, they're definitely gone I won't say they're gone for good, but if the horses are removed, it will take generations for those streams to recover. And what we didn't see in the plan put forward by the government was any funding or, you know, any sort of inclination as to how the environment was going to be repaired. It just seems to be that, oh, okay, we'll remove these horses, and it's doubtful that the plan will actually achieve that. And then we'll walk away from it. And I think the plan is missing a very important part, and that is rehabilitation of the area that the horses have damaged. It'll cost a lot of money, but, you know, it's not something that should be just left to rot away. I mean, that environment needs to be repaired and given every chance to come back as quickly as possible if the horses are removed.
We're speaking with Steve Samuels from the Snowy Mountains, from the Monero Acclimatisation Society, and you were saying to me the other day that it's very much like trout country now. It's misty, it's cold, it's rainy, it's wet, it's, you know, it's all the things that those fish from the Scottish Highlands would think is home.
Well, not only the trout, but the native fish as well. That's right. I mean, it's amazing what a little bit of water does, and this is our second year of good rain levels, good river levels, and we're seeing fish everywhere respond, which is just absolutely magnificent. And we're getting fish sort of turn up, all sorts of fish turn up in all sorts of places that we thought they were gone from, you know, such as the capacity of fish to move around in these high water levels, their capacity to survive and to breed. And it doesn't really matter whether you're a person who likes to come up the highlands here and fish for trout, or whether you're a lowland angler that likes to fish for cod or golden perch. This water has really just been such a wonderful event, and I think we've got 1 or 2 years of it. Of course, I don't want to be a doomsayer, but, you know, what's around the corner? Could be another drought, who knows? But at the moment, I think any angler should be out there lapping it up, because it's absolutely fantastic at the moment.
And what about the Monero that your society takes its name from? It's a really strange area. It has very high growth rate, beautiful streams when there's water, but it's also in a rain shadow and very susceptible to drought.
Yes.
You know, is that area bouncing back?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe, Scott. Like I say, we've had 2 good years now. And we're seeing fish come out. Oh, look, a friend of mine sent me a photo a little while ago of a 9-pound brown trout that he caught out of a creek, probably no wider than an average roadway, you know. These fish have just responded very, very well. So, and that the reason that they are sort of marginal streams, as we call them, is that, one, you know, they are small streams, so they don't hold a huge amount of water, so they do dry out quickly. But you're right, they're in a rain shadow area. But when we get this rain, they just bounce back, and they bounce back for a lot of years because they're in that high basalt country. Basalt country has a great capacity to soak up a lot of water, so the groundwater feeds through for a number of years in these wet years. So we're expecting another 2 or 3 really, really good seasons out of Monero, and there'll be some cracking fish caught out of there. We've done our annual stockings, and we're preparing to do them again this year. Most of our volunteers will be out over the next couple of weeks, stocking some of the streams with the lower numbers. And this all bids well for anglers who'd like to come down to the snowy region, whether you want to fish the Monero streams, whether you want to fish the high mountain streams or the lakes. It's really a great time to do it. Yeah, sure, you've got to bring your raincoat and you will be cold, but that's the nature of trout country.
those Monero streams are quite extraordinary fly fishing waters because they offer a lot of sight fishing options. Many of our streams don't have those long, deep, clear pools where fish will establish a beat and slowly patrol their area looking for a morsel. And if you can wait and hold your powder dry until they come along and drop a fly out without them seeing you, they're very, very observant. Having a spotter is always useful. It's a very exciting way to fish, and they grow very big. Is that because of the alkaline nature of the water?
Yeah, that's right. These streams up here are high alkaline. They're alkaline waters, not acid or neutral waters. And the alkalinity in the water actually encourages vast amounts of weed growth. And when you get vast amounts of weed growth, you get good aquatic insect life, and all the bugs and everything really survive because they've got plenty of hiding places. And it provides food from the smallest animal right up to the largest. So, yes, you're very much right, Scott. All these Monero streams are high growth rate streams. We sort of expect our fish to put on about 2 pound a year as an average across most streams. Yeah, some are a bit lower, but some are a bit higher. But they're all. Whereas you compare the mountain streams, the fish might only put on 400 grams or 350 grams a year.
Yeah, so they're more the peaty streams, aren't they?
And they're usually neutral to acid. And you don't see anywhere near as much weed in those streams, and they move faster. So in the pools, I guess it's like us as we get a bit old, you live in the lounge chair and you eat chip, you get fat.
That's right.
You eat lettuce and you run around the racetrack, you stay lean. So it's sort of the same, but they are very, very good streams. And like I said, they're bouncing back.
The exception to the rule of those streams, the ones that feed Eucombine and the other big impoutments, is that late in the season, you can get a 13-pound brown trout because they're up there to do the spawning business. You go from catching fish under a pound to one that's over 10 pound. That's when you get the big fish in those streams, don't you? They're the spawning streams.
Yeah, that's right. That's the nature of it. So, you get the Thredbo River running into Jindabyne, you get the Eucombine River running into Eucombine and some of the smaller streams. You've got those big lake trout that have just been out there feeding on the yabbies for years on end. They live for quite a long time. They're relatively unmolested by anglers, most of them. And then every year they make their spawning run, and that's when they become available to anglers. And well, I guess with the amount of water coming down the rivers this year, I think we're all hoping and we're all expecting that in all those big mountain lakes there'll be a significant run of trout this year up the rivers to spawn, which provides good activity for anglers, but it also means that it helps replenish our stock because it doesn't matter how many fish you actually stock. Natural reproduction is the way to get numbers back into a system.
Steve Samuels there. Next week, a Health of the Lakes report from the Snowy Mountains with Steve. Coming up on The Big Fish, stinker, shock, horror, told that he smells by a lady at the pub. How rude. How did Stinker react? You'll find out up next on The Big Fish.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
It's been a washout for most, but you've had a great week, I believe.
Oh, sensational. Absolutely sensational. Well, I had a keyhole of opportunity when there was a bit of sunshine poking through much earlier in the week, and I've forgotten what day it was now. That's what happens when you're retired. You never know what day. you have to buy the newspaper to find out what day. But I think it was Sunday I went out, and because I, you know, it was time for a feed of fish, and the sea was lumpy, but not what you'd call big. It was a sort of a building sea, but there was a fair degree of white water and some good swell, and just enough for the snapper to get interested. So I went out in front of the lighthouse in Stinkpot, and I anchored out there, and I burlied up with a heap of bread and some old prawn heads and things I'd collected. So I had a rich burley trail going in a nor'easterly wind. And, oh, gee, I had, what did I have for bait? I had big prawns, really big prawns, and pilchards. I had some pilchards. And I had one yellowtail head. Now, don't ask me how that got there but there it was. I'd probably left it there from a fishing trip, a previous trip. So anyway, so out I go, and I toss out my line. I got a set line, which is 30-pound set line, and then I fish with a 20-pound line on an Alvey reel and a long rod. So I've got two lines out, and I fished away with the prawns and the pilchards for quite a while, and there were plenty of snapper there, plenty. And some small ones, but others around the 1.5 kilo to 2 kilo mark. And then, bang, I decided to put the yellowtail head on just a 6-0 hook, and I hooked it through the nose. It was just a head, and it was an old frozen old head. And then, bang, this, oh, gee, the line went like a violin string, and the reel started squealing because it's in the rod holder. And, you know, when that pressure is exerted, and if you've got a bit too much tension on, it's a bit hard to get out of the rod holder. You know, the physics, you know, make it hard.
Yeah, well, particularly when that fish is pulling one way and you're trying to pull up and the other way.
Exactly. You've got to try and pull it up straight and then pull it out of the rod holder anyway. I got it out, and it was a nice fish. It was between 3 and 4 kilo, and I thought, oh, that's beautiful. So I'll happily go home. So up anchor, and off I go, happy. And I got home, cleaned the fish up, and I owed a few people the fish. And being able to give people fresh fish is great, isn't it?
It is lovely thing. I dropped off a nice feed of fish for my mum and dad on Sunday. I had a bit of success too, and it's the best thing ever. And particularly, I prepare them really well. And I think, as you said, when you were a kid, and my dad was the same, they never took the bones out. I don't know what they expected. You know, you have your plated have bones all around the edge, but I take the pin bones out like you showed me, and I take the skin off, and you know, give them the fillets that are ready to go. And I think, I don't know if you do all of that for your mates, but I do it for my mum and dad.
Well, you're a very nice fellow.
I'm a good son.
I'm a bit different. I left the beach towing the boat, and it got too much for me, and I was driving past the tavern, which is on the road home, so I said, I deserve a beer, because it was rough. It was really, really rough. And the rain had come down. I was wet. I was soaking wet. And I said, well, I'm going to have a beer. So I pulled up in front of the tavern, and I walked in, and there's an outside spot. So I, you know, with consideration to all those in the tavern.
See, this is why they call him Stinker, folks.
Well, this is why I stayed outside. So I stayed outside, and then I said, oh, I run a coal schooner. I said, I'd really need one. So I was out there, and then a bloke came along, and a friend, And I said, look, go over there. He was heading home. I said, go over there, open up the esky and grab a fish and take it home. So, and I gave him a bag. I found a bag in the tavern. And so he went home, happy as Larry. He took a snapper home. And then the lady that runs the tavern, I had another bag and went over. And then everyone said, can we go and have a look at your fish? I said, yeah, go over there, walk over and open up, go over the stink pot and open up the esky and have a look. Well, they're all over there. They were good fish. They were really good fish. And
you could have sold ticket stinker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I could have had a raffle. Anyway, so by the time I got home, I only had half the fish that I actually caught. The other half would stand at the tavern. And anyway, that was all well and good. And that's beautiful. Like I say, we had a lovely feed of fish. And eating fish the day you catch them is just sensational, particularly with snapper. And then 2 days later, which was the Tuesday, I decided the opportunity to go again. So I thought, well, here I go. Off I go. This time I got the pilchards. And what I did, I had 4 or 5 frozen yellowtail that I, didn't think I'd ever use again. But I said, I'll take them out and I'll see if I can do the old yellowtail head trick again. Well, the very first throw on my set 30-pound line, I hooked the 6-0 through another yellowtail head. And just remember, I'm hooking it through the nose, so it's pretty primitive.
That's a pretty big bait.
No weight at all. Well, bang, it's gone off again. And the rod just squealed. It makes unbelievable noise. And this time I wound and wound, and I finally, and this fish was 5 kilo. It's a 5 kilo, beautiful. This is only a bit over a kilometre from home. Only takes me about 10 minutes to get there. And, I thought, that's a great start. I was even thinking of going home then. But then I thought, I'll get a few more for a few people around Fingal. So then I got an emperor, and then I got 2 kingfish, which I cursed, and then I got a salmon, which I didn't curse so much because I made fish cakes out of that. And then I got another few snapper, and the fish were biting like crazy. I said, well, I got enough. I'm going home. So this time I went straight past the tavern because I said, I'm not going in there again. Oh, dear, I've had a great week. It's been so exciting. And then, of course, all the rain came, so I'm housebound. Well, but I've still had a great week.
Just brilliant stuff, Stinker. And you just made it in before the flood. So well done. I'm glad someone got out and got into them.
Oh, look, there's plenty of fish out there. But I'm the only boat on the beach that leaves the beach because, well, it's rough. It's rough. And I don't take anyone with me because in 11-foot tinny, in a rock and rolling sea, you don't have to look after anyone else but yourself. And I really, people know where I go, but they won't go there. You've got to anchor. I've mentioned it before, in the deep water, as close to the bommy as you can get, and you have a regular northeast wind blowing, which will hold you. It's good that you have wind. You want wind because the wind will aim your boat in the right direction. And if the current also goes in that direction and you're fishing adjacent to the bommy when the big waves, like it's awesome to see this wave coming from out at sea, and it might be a huge wave. And then it hits the shallow water, and then it drops, and then it gets under your boat, but all it does is lift it.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you what,
for the uninitiated, that first big wave that crashes down onto the bommy, you swear to goodness that it's going to clean you up. Pretty daunting sight. You're always keeping a watchful eye on the sea. And anyway, the conditions have all got to line up for it to be that good, hasn't it? When it does, you do well, but it's not as if you're going to deplete the spot because it's not always that good. You've just got to be ready to go when you're ready to go, as you are.
Well, there's so much country. There is so much country out there that's similar, habitat. And I'm fishing on one little spot. But a lot of it is in sanctuary zone in the marine park. And I'm thinking that, you know, there must be, there's, everywhere there's a wash, there's snapper, everywhere. You know, it's remarkable. It's a very, very, it's a fantastic fishing place. But if it's calm, if it's calm and there's no waves, you won't catch one. You just don't catch them because they spread out. But once that sea starts to rock and roll, it seems to me the bigger the swell, the bigger the snapper. The smaller the swell, the smaller the snapper.
Very interesting.
To the degree when it gets like a bathtub, you just don't catch them.
No, there's only one foolproof way to catch them, and that's to wait for you to pull up outside the tavern with Stink Pot on the back of the old four-wheel drive and look in your esky.
Well, one lady said, she said, you smell a lot. And I said, well, look, I must apologise, but I've been fishing. So I said, I'll sit out here and you can go inside and you can get away from me. Now, the modern-day fishermen, see, the modern-day recreational fishermen, they smell like a Methodist flower show because, you know, they got the plastics and so they don't use bait and they use gloves and they've always got something on their feet. Well, I can't see any sense in wearing shoes fishing. You know, that's got me beat, especially if you're in a boat. But people do, you know. So it's all news to me.
Stinker, that's why we love you. Tight lines, mate.
Yeah, right, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And fishing has always been regarded as an outdoor sport. But we live in strange times in New South Wales at the moment, and the true tale of the flathead caught and released inside the tackle shop. And for all we know, he's still swimming about somewhere under the counter. It's an amazing tale. We'll share it with you next on The Big Fish.
Fishing worms, fishing worms. Everybody's wishing they had fishing worms. Find them in the garden, turn over a rock. Slip them in your sandwich, put them in your sock. That's fishing worms, fishing worms. Well, my big sister, she don't care for my fishing worms. Big ones, little ones, they scare her to death. She'd make a chocolate shake, I dropped a couple in the blender. And now she's looking at me with bated breath. From eating fishing worms, fishing worms. Everybody's wishing they had fishing worms. Do your English homework, underline a word. Circle direct object and transitive verb with a fishing worm, fishing worm. Wrap them around a corkscrew, twist them around some twine, take them to the hell spa so they can unwind. That's fishing worm, fishing worm. Fishing worms, fishing worms. Everybody's wishing they had fishing worms. Find them on the sidewalk, crispy as a chip. When your aunt comes over, chop them in the dip for some fishing worms. Fishing worms. Find them in the backyard, underneath some leaves. Make them little dresses, just leave off the sleeves. That's fishing worms. Fishing worms. Like everything you can think about fishing worms. Ooshy, gushy, gushy ones, ones that wiggle and squish. There's only one thing I don't like doing with fishing worms. That is, of course, I hate to catch fish. I hate fish, just fishing worms. Fishing worms. Everybody's wishing they had fishing worms. Fishing worms. Fishing worms.
Not hard to find worms at the moment. They're above ground with the wet. We've had so much tragedy that every now and then we need to have a bit of a laugh. And an amazing story of the floods up next.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Fishing's always been regarded as an outdoors sport, but we live in strange times indeed. ABC cameraman Andy Lobb, you've seen something that not many have seen in fishing.
Yeah, g'day, Scott. We were down at the entrance here on the Central Coast where the floods have come through, the Tuggera Lake levels have risen and actually lapping at shin-deep water through the entrance boat shed. You've got a feel for the people that run it because they're waiting for the tide to drop. But as they were sitting there watching, and they count the flood level off benchmarkers on their counter, you know, from the various years it's flooded. Anyway, shin deep water, there's little potty mullet swimming through the
inside.
Swimming through the shop. All the tackle and the higher fishing rods and the they're a boat hire business with these beautiful old just under 5 metre lake launches.
Clinker boats, yeah, they're just gorgeous wooden boats, and they're so beautiful. They're brightly painted in reds and greens and yellows and blues. They're beautiful historic boats. They've been there for decades and decades.
Yeah, they're postcard boats and, you know, set off against the backdrop of the entrance bridge flying over. And it's just one of those time-honoured traditions. And they're serious about trying to preserve that tradition down there. But anyway, they're cooling off in the afternoon. The locals sitting there with the water lapping around their shins. One of the ladies who works in the shop, Kelly, grabbed one of the little higher rods that they rent out to the public, and there was a bit of bait from a freezer that they had, you know, up above water level, chucked a prawn on and basically just threw it off the back veranda of the shop. Anyway, she made her day because it's been a bit of a bleak day for them trying to clean the place up. Anyway, she caught a plate-sized flathead. Brought it in with a fair bit of hilarity from the crew.
So she's brought it in through the door, into the tackle shop.
Yeah.
And you've got lures and rods and reels and line and bait and all the stuff that you have inside a tackle shop. And you've also got sort of half a foot of water.
Yep.
And this flathead's swimming around at your feet.
The flathead was, off the, just, and we're only talking one of those tiny little you know, casting rods.
Mm.
And so they... attempting to get the flathead off the hook, it escaped. And so it was, they were trying to herd it out of the shop back out through the back door, which was still awash. And last I saw it was disappearing off under some chair or shelf. And just checking back with them, they didn't recover the flatty. So the flatty is still
inside the tackle shop.
The boat shed.
So you won't have to go outside to catch it. You can give it a go. They'll have plenty of soft plastics there, a hard body lures, bait if you want to, and just maybe dangle it under the display cabinet with all the lures in it. We're speaking with Andy Lobb, who was working on the flood disaster at Tuggera Lakes with the flood level getting to a moderate flood level, flooding into that beautiful old boat shed. They've been flooded over the last few years and the community are rallying around them. We really need them to keep going, even though they've just about had enough. But it's such an iconic, historic tourist attraction. And if the people listening to The Big Fish around New South Wales knew about it, they'd all rally around to save them because so many happy memories for so many families there at the entrance, Andy.
It sure is. And we were down there doing, you know, live crosses for the news, and we were there as the weather was actually breaking. There was a bit of blue sky. The pelicans were coming back to the channel, and that's another attraction, really.
Yeah, the pelican feeding's right near there, yes.
I think they've suspended that during COVID and whatever, but the pelicans still show up.
Yeah.
And so do the locals. There was you could see the fresh water. They've opened the mouth of the entrance to let some of the flood water out, but the fresh water's coming in. And on that tide line,
well, you've got the salt water coming in that's blue, and you've got the fresh water flood water coming down that's tannin stained. And I believe they collided, and that created a feeding frenzy.
On that spot, some of the young local blokes were down there, and they were bringing in brim off rods, hand over fist. One bloke caught two on the one bait.
Amazing.
And they were one after another, and they were good sized, you know, rod bending fish too.
Yeah, well, the brim and the flathead and all the fish know that interface between the flood water and the fresh seawater coming in, it's pushing tons and tons of bait and all of the food coming out of the system, and it's just an absolute smorgasbord for them. And the pelicans know it, don't they? And the fisher people know it as well. But that is one of the great stories of Flathead Court. And we've got photographic proof. You've taken a great photo of her holding it up before it got away in the shop. And it's a good, you know, a good legal-sized flathead. It certainly would be a feed, but they wanted to let it go. But I'm sure it would have made its way out the door by now.
You'd hope.
Yeah,
otherwise,
sure.
They might have a new fishing competition out there.
Yeah, and look, they'd had problems there too during the drought of siltation, that area was too shallow to launch those boats. So hopefully this flood will scour out their little boat harbour there. The water won't get too high inside the shop and ruin all their stuff, and they can get back to hiring boats and keeping holiday makers happy from all over New South Wales, Andy.
It's a place that's really worth a look.
Yeah, it is indeed. And let's wish everyone well through the floods at Ballina and the Northern Rivers and all of those folk. I know yourself and Ben Millington have been a local crew here. We've had many ABC camera crews up and down the coast trying to bring people the reality of what's going on and to try to help out as much as we can. I guess education is very important too, isn't it, about driving around in flooded waters.
Yeah, and look, that saying comes back, you know, in the worst of times, the best in people comes to the fore. And honestly, everywhere we went yesterday, we met good people. We were at evacuation centres. We were with the SES. They had footy teams coming into pack sandbags, and the water rescue people, everyone was very mindful of the tricky situations you can have down here on the coast roads. So all in all, it was very well handled from what we saw.
And I guess the best thing us fisher folk can do, is we love this sort of stuff, catching fish in these beautiful estuaries, is as soon as it's safe, get back to Ballina, get back to the Northern Rivers, get back to the entrance and the Hawkesbury River as well, and get back to all of those flood-affected places and spend our money on catching a few fish, Andy.
Once the water resides from some of those caravan parks, it's a good place to be.
That's where we'll be. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Andy Lobb there, ABC cameraman. Time to up anchor. We'll catch you next week on The Big Fish. Tight lines.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.